Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Vicki Courtney is a national speaker, best-selling author of a whole bunch of books, and the book we're talking with her today is Rest Assured, A Recovery Plan for Weary Souls. Vicki, welcome to Life Quest.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Why did you write this book at this time?
Wow. This is actually something, well, a chapter of life that I've been in, and I would say past tense now. And a couple years ago, I really suffered from, I guess you could say, a burnout of sorts in ministry. And you mentioned all sorts of books, and I'm sure that was a factor that played into it, writing a lot of books and, of course, just family life and that sort of thing, all good things. But I found myself just exhausted, worn out, and really my soul, you know, felt empty. So I began to take steps, of course, starting with prayer and asking the Lord to show me how I could restore rest in my weary soul. And so it's been, you know, that journey that He's led me along down a calmer path, if you will. And out of that, just couldn't wait to write a book talking more about just the fruits of that. Not sure I could ever go back to that weary pace at this point.
Yes. I was I'm a pastor for 26 years, and we can do good because we think that's all we need to do, and that will justify it, and somehow we'll survive.
Exactly. And I think, too, Dwight, what happens is we find ourselves, even in a culture, even in the church, that esteems chronic busyness. You know, it's almost like to rest would imply laziness. Whereas, you know, as I began to just dive deep into a lot of those passages where God commands us to rest, and not only that, He models rest for us, I began to see that, if anything, you know, it's sinful to not practice these principles of rest. Or, you know, when we go in to serve, and I'm sure you can relate to this, if you've been in ministry that long, we serve from an empty place after a while if we're not restoring our soul.
Right at the beginning of your book, you listed on page 7, you might be too busy if, and there's a whole list of things, and they're all very familiar.
Yeah, and probably everybody will be busted when they read that page at some level. So I think, and I wanted to do that because I think a lot of times we see things out there, you know, that talks about busyness and how to repair that, how to tweak your calendar, you know, and people oftentimes think, well, that's not a problem for me. You know, we don't realize after a while we've been going the same exhausting pace that it's not a pace that God would ever endorse. So, you know, and again, I go back to, because our culture esteems busyness, a lot of times it's, I think we think, well, it's, this isn't my problem. But yet we can't argue with the fact that our souls are weary and feel empty a lot of the time.
And there are a lot of people who, like with their children, are doing a lot of things. I just literally worry about some of the kids never having time to be kids.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. My husband and I, we're old-timers now. We just launched our last one out of the nest about 4 years ago, and now they've all married. And so we teach a Sunday school class at our church of younger couples. Let's say their kids are anywhere from newborn to young grammar school. And we were talking just the other day at the differences that we see in, you know, in that generation of parenting, if you will, and the pressures that they face. I mean, a lot of them share that with us, that if they don't sign their kids up, starting at a young age, by the way, for everything under the sun, then they feel like, you know, they're not being a good, responsible parent to attempt to cultivate their children's gifts and talents and that sort of thing. So we see those pressures that they're up against, and it would be so easy to fall into that trap of, you know, over-scheduling your lives, and in the midst of all that, missing out on life itself.
Just a few pages after the one we just referenced, you say, well, what happens here is that there's this payoff that we think we're getting. And you list three of them, but define payoff, first of all.
Well, I wanted to do that, just to give a little background on it. You know, again, I think we see a lot of things out there that are quick fixes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like tweak your calendar here, you know, take a few things off. And I used to do those. I used to actually try those. And then, lo and behold, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later, I was right back to where I'd been before with the same busy pace. And so when I went to write this book, I wanted to make sure, because my point of healing in regard to busyness, and I know we'll get to it, but I talk about other things other than busyness that leave our souls lacking rest and weary. But chronic busyness, I led with that one because I think it's just so huge for everyone. But my point of healing came when I was able to really tap down deeper and look at, you know, what is going on beneath the busyness. If you peel back that veneer in my life, what, you know, on my crowded calendar and, you know, all those activities that I was involved in, that I had my kids involved in,
mm-hmm.
What is really going on? And so that's where I list several different payoffs or common reasons that we might fall into this trap of chronic busyness. And I did that because I don't think that we can really experience true healing until we realize the why behind our busyness.
Yeah.
Otherwise, all we're doing is tweaking, you know, putting a Band-Aid on a problem and, you know, again, making some modifications to our calendar, and then we're shocked when all of a sudden we're right back at the same pace we were before.
And
so, yeah, I list the payoffs, and for me that payoff was, I think it was number three,
yes,
where I talk about identity.
Exactly.
And it was painful, Dwight. Let me tell you, I mean, when I started, you know, really tapping into that with the help of the Lord and looking at, okay, I say yes to a lot of things because it's become my identity.
Right.
My worth is closely tied into doing and serving,
mm-hmm.
And performing. And like you alluded to early on, these can be good things, you
mm-hmm.
know, church, volunteer
right.
church activities, ministry activities. And so it's important that we recognize that even with those things, even though they're good things, should not be our identity. Our identity should be found in Christ and Christ alone.
And your identity is, well, I, you know, she's the go-to person if you want something done.
Right. You can bet you will be the person they go to over and over again.
Exactly. And part of the problem also you allude to, you say in your book, is we look at other people. Mothers look at other mothers. Look at all that they're doing. Maybe I'm not doing enough. And maybe I am holding my kids back by not getting them involved in more things. And so there's that kind of competitiveness that goes on.
Yeah, there really is. I was just talking with a mom who, her daughter is, I believe, fifth grade, and she has two other kids
mm-hmm.
younger than that, so three total. And she was saying that she doesn't have her fifth grade daughter involved in anything right now. And the reaction that she is getting from other moms when they say, well, are you going to sign Kate up for, you know, this dance group, or are
right.
you signing her up for this drama, you know, thing that we're doing? And she said, no, we're going to lay low, you know, this school
yes.
year and really not do anything. We've got our hands full with homework and, you know, me trying to corral the other two kids that are younger.
Mm-hmm.
And she said there's almost a sort of looking down at her
yeah.
like, oh, her poor child,
right.
you know, is missing out. And she said, yet I, you know, we are actually feeling for the first time a level of rest that we haven't felt in a long time, by really taking a break from all the activities. And so you're absolutely right. There's a lot of pressure out there that, you know, we all need to jump on that bandwagon of having after school activities. And again, these can even be good things.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to another mom recently, three kids again, and they all range in age from about 12 and under. And she is absolutely worn out from church activities. And, you know, it's all, again, these are wonderful, good things, but she said, she's a teacher. They jump in the car after she has a busy day at school. She takes them off to this Monday night sort of, you know, Bible study group that the church holds and E-teen or something. And then she teaches there as well, and then the next night it's something else, and then her husband's on staff at the church. Yeah. You know, they're there every time the door's open, and she was saying that she's halfway through the book, and that this is just a godsend, because for a long time she's felt like, as a staff wife, this is part of what's expected of her. And it very well may be at her church. That would be unfortunate if you can't, we can't give them a break. You know, you could probably speak to that better than I could, the need for that.
In chapter two, you dive right into this exhausting pursuit of happiness, is how you title it. I like the couple pages there about the if-then trap. You know, if only this would happen, then I'd really be happy.
Right. Now, it keeps us chasing after this imaginary carrot dangling before us, and if we could only capture that. And,
yeah.
So, that's a biggie for a lot of women out there.
And then you say on page 42, the abundant life, and you quote a friend who decided that, wouldn't God want me to be happy, as she wandered off with somebody else's husband. And, you know, again, this is following through with this endless pursuit of the future happiness that doesn't ever seem to come for most people.
Right, right. And I talk in that chapter about how really we're trained by our culture, and especially, you know, we live in an affluent nation and we have so many privileges and luxuries, and most of us at least at our fingertips. And so it's easy to begin to, or to fall into kind of that mindset that we deserve happiness. And I lead into that chapter and talking about, you know, even in our declaration, that was, you know, part of what we are owed, you know, as a nation, this pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so we sort of buy into that mindset that, you know, I deserve happiness. But what's happened is, you know, we forget that as believers, God never really endorsed this chasing after happiness. He gives us joy in the midst of any and all circumstances, many of them unhappy circumstances, and, you know, tells us this is something that, you know, that the only fulfillment that we really will ever, that will give us full satisfaction is going to, of course, be, you know, our relationship with Him and building that. And so once, and again, I share these things, whether it's the exhausting pursuit of happiness and chronic busyness, and I know we'll dive into the other two out of the four enemies of rest that I cover in the book. I bought into all four of them, just as a disclaimer. And so, and the more I've served in ministry, speaking and writing to women and hear back from them, these seem to be common enemies for most every woman out there when it comes to what robs them of rest in their soul.
I really resonated with chapter four. A lot of people, including me, we end up worrying about things that we really can't affect anyways. We worry about the politics in the world, or we worry about what the president should or shouldn't be doing. And sometimes it seems as if some of the, if we don't have enough to worry about, well, just listen to talk radio and they'll come up with 27 other things we should be really deeply concerned about.
Right. Or get on your Facebook news feed and scroll down at all the doom and gloom links.
Spare me.
So I'm a worrier too, and so I, you know, and again, in speaking to a lot of women, for some women, it's not really a struggle with chronic busyness, and maybe it's not a struggle with, you know, this exhausting pursuit of happiness, but it's, as you're saying, you know, this dwelling on things that are outside of our control and sort of a constant state of worry or angst that, again, this is something that robs us of rest in our souls. And so felt it was very necessary to address that. And really, even one of the things that God showed me as I was working on that aspect of, you know, trying to redeem rest for my soul and realizing that worry was a huge enemy, is He showed me that I have control in that. Just as you were saying, I mean, we don't have to expose ourselves, if you will, to all these different negative news sources. And I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, we've got 24-hour news now.
Right.
I'm an old-timer, like I said. So back in the day, if you wanted to watch the news or you wanted to get news on a daily basis, you took the paper in the morning. If you lived in a big city, you might get one in the morning and in the evening. And you watched the 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock news, and that was about it.
Yes.
And if it was a really big story, you might get a breaking news bulletin, but you didn't have 24-hour news shows that if you, you know, you could really access bad news all the time. I mean, they're having to fill that 24 hours with something, right? So you're going to get a whole lot of bad news and very little good news. And then, of course, social media, you know, as I mentioned, getting onto some of these sites and just seeing right there whether you went looking for it or not, it finds you. And so it's very easy to, you know, if you weren't worried about something before you got on a site or turned, you turned the channel to your favorite 24-hour news show, then you certainly by the end of it have plenty of things to worry about that you didn't even know you needed to be worried about.
If you just tuned in, folks, I'm talking with Vicki Courtney. The book is Rest Assured, A Recovery Plan for Weary Souls. And you give a number of different directions how we can get out of this cycle. And one of them you allude to is, you know, God has given us, talks about we should have a day of worship, a day of rest. And whether it's Saturday or Sunday, but, you know, even that has broken down for many people as to just an hour out of the day. And then the rest of the day is just as busy as the rest of the week.
Yeah, and it's deeply concerning to me because, you know, in that chapter, that part, what you're talking about, comes in part two, where, you know, part one of the book are the four enemies of rest, and that's where I call it the intervention, if you can imagine. We have a serious problem going on here, and so let's have an intervention, and then part two is actually where we get to the recovery plan. And so I talk about this day of rest, and again, being modeled by God, and with the Sabbath and such, because that is part of our recovery. And I found myself in a position, honestly, where I had to argue for that. Not only go back to Scripture and lay it out that this is a biblical mandate, but that really it is something that God ordained because he knew we would need it to refuel and to make it through the rest of the week. And then also talk about the importance of the fellowship of believers, you know, in the mix of all that, because I think what we found today is, you know, a lot of people who give up on church for a variety of reasons, and, you know, whether it's they don't agree with everything their pastor says, or, you know, it's just their kids are involved in competitive sports on the weekend now, or, you know, we find a variety of reasons out there where people just, it's not a priority. And so what I wanted to do is really lay that out as, you know, in addition to personal rest, you know, and having a quiet time and time alone with the Lord and building your prayer life, this fellowship of believers and gathering with fellow believers is a huge component of finding rest for our souls. And I think we don't realize how much we need that until it's missing. But I feel for a lot of the younger generation today who they've not even really experienced it on a consistent basis. And so I'm praying, you know, that will be one thing that comes of many, you know, from this book, is that we'll see more people begin to make that a priority in their lives and for the sake of their families.
Vicki, tell our listeners about the format of the book, how at the end of every chapter and section you've got quite a bit of interactive things here.
Well, I do. So I have something, well, of course, at the end of each chapter, rest stop questions. And I'm actually, as part of my own plan to rest, I decided and told my publisher that I did not want to do a Bible study for this book. It takes a lot more out of you when you have to do tapings and things like that. So I laid out the book in such a way that an individual could read it, and these questions could challenge them at the end of each chapter. But it's very group-friendly. My years of writing Bible studies, I use that to kind of build in, you know, what would that look like if a group of women all decided to pick up the book and, you know, go to rehab together, rest rehab, if you will, together. And so I have not only the questions, but I have a weekly dare at the end of each of the four chapters in part two, which is the recovery plan itself. And, you know, this is not for the faint at heart. I mean, I this is where, you know, we want to see action along with these principles. And so I think it could be, you know, a fun thing to get women together and all be doing it at the same time and come back together and share, you know, what did you learn in the 1 week dare where you gave up social media and certain, you know, I talk a lot about, and one of the enemies that we didn't really visit about was tethered souls and how we're so overconnected.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a big dare that I share in part two of the book. And another dare that goes along with the chapter on solitude. A lot of us have no idea how to do alone time anymore.
Yes.
I mean, we are constantly bombarded with buzzing phones and, you know, distractions everywhere. And so, especially our younger generation, mm-hmm. what does that look like to actually be still and know God and you know, do some sitting and listening rather than, you know, constantly being distracted with everything around us and doing all the talking, quite honestly.
And even if we're not watching television, it's on. It's in the background.
Right.
And then we're doing other things. At the end of the book, I'd like to tell our listeners, there is a bonus called a 30-day restoration guide, which is great day by day. And then 100 ways to give it a rest, which I think is going to be very helpful. Vicki, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
Oh, wow. Well, it should be just at any of your major bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBook.com. Of course, they can go to my website, more information there at VickiCourtney.com. And,
mm-hmm.
So hopefully, most of the bookstores are carrying it, Lifeway.
Right. Vicki, it's always a pleasure talking to you. And
I enjoyed it.
And thank you so much for you know, having this book, and I trust that our listeners will find a copy. It'll make a difference in their life. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.